Hello, everyone, and welcome to an all-new episode of Insurance Uncovered. The podcast is produced by the National Association of Mutual Insurance Companies and is your source for insurance news and perspective from thought leaders in the property casualty insurance industry. I'm your host, Justin Higgs. Today, we're uncovering artificial intelligence, how the industry is navigating the risks and opportunities of using generative AI in insurance. Plus, a new bill in Illinois aims to restrict insurance practices. We'll break down the differing opinions on what is most fair for consumers. But first, Illinois' Secretary of State supports a bill that would establish an auto insurance rate review process and prevent insurance companies from using more than 15 rating factors. Alexi Janulius told lawmakers at a House Insurance Committee hearing on the so-called Motor Vehicle Fairness Act that an individual's driving record should serve as the primary factor when setting rates.
So it only stands to reason that if we require you to have auto insurance, then you shouldn't have to jump through multiple hoops and face judgment based on a series of criteria that have absolutely no bearing on your ability to drive.
NAMIC Director of Auto and Underwriting Policy Tony Cotto also testified at the hearing, where he told lawmakers using only factors based on driving records could backfire.
Policyholders benefit from risk-based pricing as insurers compete for business. We've heard already you can shop around. And they ensure that lower-risk policyholders are not subsidizing higher-risk policyholders. So more sound factors, more data, actually makes unfair discrimination against protected classes less likely.
NAMIC recently commissioned a study by Milliman to examine the potentially market-disrupting effects of the legislation. It found data to support how the state's insurance market is healthy and stable, how consumers do not benefit from restrictive rate regulation, and why insurers must be allowed to match rate to risk. You can view the study online at NAMIC.org. Legislation that could set a dangerous precedent in how wildfire risk is assessed was overwhelmingly approved by the House Financial Services Committee. The Wildfire Insurance Coverage Study Act advanced in the U.S. House following a 47-2 vote. The bill would require the Government Accountability Office to assess wildfire risk and analyze the impact of wildfires on homeowner and commercial property policies. This would include premium increases and coverage cutbacks, a survey of state regulators' responses, and outlining challenges related to underwriting wildfire risk. While NAMIC recognizes the bill would simply authorize a study, it has the potential to negatively impact the industry, policyholders, and taxpayers. NAMIC fears that measures like this can be a pretext to artificially bring insurance rates down, hiding the true cost of the risk that policyholders face in areas prone to wildfires. Doing so would only encourage development in risky areas and shift costs to taxpayers. The House Financial Services Committee also delayed a vote scheduled on legislation that would place some restrictions on the Federal Insurance Office's ability to gather data from insurers. The bill was one of several that was struck from the agenda so that lawmakers would have time to get to the House floor to vote on a government funding measure to avoid a partial shutdown. With all the buzz around artificial intelligence, it can be hard to understand what it means for the industry and for claims in the real world. Joining us on today's Unscripted, NAMIC CEO Neil Aldridge talks with PLRB President and CEO Brian Falchuk about what we can do to make sense of the risks, regulations, and ethics of AI uses while finding a path forward that fits our values as mutual insurers.
So joining me today is Brian Falchuk. Brian is the president and CEO of the PLRB. Many of you in the industry may know the organization. He also has been a thinker and an observer and a practitioner to some degree of some of the artificial intelligence trends in the industry. And he actually recently spoke at the NAMIC Claims Conference on this topic. And so we thought for those of you that weren't able to attend the Claims Conference, maybe you'd benefit from the conversation about artificial intelligence and learn a little bit from Brian this morning. So Brian, thanks for joining us today.
No, thanks for having me on.
So let's just sort of get right into it here. Insurance, you know, it's always been a data-driven industry to some degree or another. One thing I've learned in the advocacy front is, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, is data-driven products tend to generate some degree of controversy amongst policymakers. And maybe we're going to see some of that as it relates to the artificial intelligence. So let's talk about artificial intelligence. You know, what do you see as the ways the industry can benefit from it? What are some of the current thinking around artificial intelligence in the insurance industry?
Yeah, I mean, I think I framed things up at the conference around the sort of traditional AI that we've used that is more limited in scope. And so it's, you know, specific tool for a specific set of tasks. If it's thrown a curveball, well, then it just kicks out. It doesn't know how to swing at that, you know, kind of new pitch. That's that type of solution is general AI. And that's the stuff that, you know, we hear all the buzz about it. You give it a new problem. I said it's like, I didn't come up with this, but it's like a baker who understands the fundamentals of baking. They can make something they've never made before if you give them the recipe or you know, you ask them for it. They don't have to know exactly how to do it in the exact way every time. While that's a useful framing for sort of the 101 level, I think when we look at the industry, what I've seen instead is a focus on the sort of efficiency, process, customer experience stuff, which is good and necessary, and I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. However, if you look at our results as an industry, that's not actually the stuff that is going to move us. That to me is table stakes. So that's great. You should be doing it, but you kind of don't have a choice, and you also shouldn't be resting there. If you look at our results, even if you wiped out the expense ratio of many carriers, they're still unprofitable right now, or really close to it. So it's not, you know, it's not that we can say, well, we made this process 15% more efficient, job done. What we need to be doing is using AI to say, we've got all of this data. How can we do better with it? How can we understand risk better? How can we price in a way that we've not been able to before? How can we see the problems before they emerge and take an action rather than trying to clamp it down once it's become a claim and, you know, there's plaintiff's bars involved and, all the kinds of upsetting and scary stuff that we focus on in the claims conference starts to take place. That's where I'm starting to see some of the earlier activity. There are great solutions out there already. I just think as an industry, we're still a bit hesitant, and I've heard a lot of the reasons why, but you know, just because something's new and we're not sure if it's going to work, if we know what we're doing today doesn't work and you can't look at the combined ratios and think otherwise, when we know what we're doing now doesn't work, we don't really have the right to say, well, we're not so sure about that. Yeah. We actually do need to experiment and try.
Yes, that's it. I mean, certainly industry, generally speaking, mutual companies, maybe even more so, you know, have the reputation of being, you know, not on the bleeding edge of technological advancement, typically speaking, sort of watch and learn from others and, you know, adopt it with some deliberation in mind. It's interesting, perhaps. In this case, you're right. Certainly the industry results of late are not great and need would make an argument that perhaps a different approach here is necessary. So let's look at that. Where do you see, like, are there any specifics you see in the industry that, you know, companies are utilizing this, or is it just really sort of an exploration? Let's just tinker around with, you know, things at the moment, which how do you see where the industry is on the spectrum here?
So, of course, it's a mix. And, you know, when you said the bleeding edge, I think we use that as a reason to be scared off of it. And it's OK that it's a mix. You know, there are some of the newer carriers, maybe they've been built from the ground up on AI. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about disruption and whatnot. Like, that's very interesting. They can do that. But if you're a decades or centuries old company, that is a massive shift. It is too disruptive to your business. And I would say that you can be too disruptive and kind of blow the whole thing up. Mm-hmm. I think it is better not to have a wait and see approach, but to find some pockets where, and the example I shared at the conference was around Ohio Mutual doing something with an AI provider in particular on very like random seeming pocket of their business, but around people's propensity to have wood burning stoves or solid fuel stoves that they weren't reporting. And it's like, that's not the first thing that I think would come to be like, you know, driving behavior or something. But it was a fascinating way for Ohio Mutual to say, hey, you know, we realize we're not ready to go full bore in this thing. We don't even know if that's the right answer, but we also can't just sit here and wait for it. So we need to find, given our values and who we are and what we're ready for, or how do we get involved with this and start to learn? So when it does become more the norm that, you know, a lot is going on with AI and a lot of your pricing and whatever else is going on through advanced analytics and AI, can we be ready to do that instead of just picking up and learning at that point? So I do see pockets where carriers, or maybe it's in a particular line, so they're doing something in workers' comp to try to predict and prevent. Maybe they're doing something in auto where they're, you know, trying a different way of looking at the risks and how they interject with them. maybe it's just the massive amounts of data that you have, and it's too much for a human being or even traditional models to pull together some of the signal between the kind of correlation of this data. One of the interesting early things that I've seen is, and I haven't seen enough of this, I wish there's more, but what we have going on in the underwriting data is often quite separate to the claims data. And you know, I spent 10 years in traditional players and 10 years with specialists, and the specialists, the claims and the underwriters often sit together. And so you're learning in real time, you know, the claims for, I ran claims for a carrier. We were hearing from underwriting what was going to be coming down the pike at us as, you know, the claims that materialized. And the underwriters were hearing about what was happening to the risk they were writing that played out in losses, made them much better underwriters. What if you could connect that signal in, you know, the underwriting data, the claims data, the customer service data, so you knew what people's likelihoods would be to behave in certain ways,
yeah,
respond to certain offers. That's not something humans or traditional models can do. You do need models that are far more flexible and responsive and dynamic, and that really can only happen with AI.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned the customer service. One of the more interesting stories I've heard, and you know, I'm always in the insurance world in my role here at NAMIC, but not really in the insurance business day to day running a company. But one of the more interesting examples I heard, there's a company that's, and probably more than one, using AI to evaluate their customer service interactions.
Yeah.
So they are measuring, you know, they're looking at the words used in the email or the phone conversations, and they've got an algorithm that is telling them the likelihood of that customer to shop based on the language they're using and the kinds of questions they're answering or asking. And so, you know, that's just one little minor example that I'm not, like your wood burning stove example, not sure it would be on the tip of it. I think everybody goes to the rating or something like that, not necessarily these other applications.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that sort of sentiment analysis is an interesting one, because it's one thing when I'm interacting with the customer and, you know, could I be a better trained customer service rep, claims rep, underwriter, et cetera? Yes. But there are certain things, you know, I don't know how everyone behaves. I can't see body language when we're on the phone, or certainly if it's written text. But I also can only engage in what's in front of me. And the reality in this industry is our people are overloaded. No question about that. We have, and we're trying to do more with fewer people, and that's fine. That's the efficiency side of it. But that also means, you know, great examples in claims. If you're working on a claim right now, and there's a customer on another claim or a claimant who is sending something in, and there's something inflammatory about it, there's something signaling, hey, there's a problem here, until you go into that file, you're not going to know. And it could be prioritized and flagged to you when you come back to your queue. But what if you're dealing on something kind of mundane, and there's someone who, you know, there's a pretty major event going on in another file? Without that sort of sentiment analysis, looking across the piece, you'd never catch that. And so I think it's an interesting way for all of us, as we're more taxed, to be able to spend our time more effectively. And that notion is coming into lots of different places. I see it in underwriting, where, you know, is it worth the underwriter's time to work on this risk versus that risk? Mm-hmm. One of them is a much higher likelihood of closing and would be much better for the book if they were to close it, and would teach the brokers, hey, this is what our appetite is, and we're really competitive in it. So it becomes this virtuous cycle where you focus on the right risks at the right time, give the brokers the right service and speed, and you're adding quality to the book instead of wasting your time and risk that you may not write or you kind of wish you didn't write.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I've learned something already. Sentiment analysis is the fancy word. That's a good one. It's not part of my normal vocabulary around here, but I think it may start to be. So let's move over here to the regulatory side. Lots of, this is a little more in our wheelhouse. We've been dealing, the NAIC has got a model bulletin on AI. I'm not sure a lot of people in the industry really have looked at it. It's not particularly good. You know, and it's got some biased language in it that we are a little concerned about. But
it's just reaffirmed.
Yeah, it was. So, and there are some states that are beginning to roll it out. Now, it's the old, you know, it's a bulletin, and it's, you know, not exactly, you know, it's, what is it, right? What force of law does it really have? But at any rate, it's out there. But let's talk a little bit about the regulatory side of this. What are you seeing there? I mean, there's obviously, you know, could be the sort of, this is, you know, AI in some respects is, you know, the nuclear black box, right? It is the black boxes of all black boxes, right, that we've been through before. But how do you see that playing out? What are you hearing on the regulatory side?
So, you know, NAMIC is definitely more plugged into the regulatory sentiment than I am, but I've talked to a number of carriers and their regulatory folks and, you know, what their concerns are. I think this is the normal response every time we have a major shift in approach.
Yeah.
You know, the unknown is scary, especially to this industry. People from the outside think we love risk because we go around buying it. It's like, no, it's the opposite. We're trying to shut it down and close it into a box as much as possible. I think this is a case of what we've been doing is not okay, and we need to recognize that before we issue something different. So I love getting into debates with people who talk about credit score and then say AI is bad and biased, because credit score is biased. We already know that. That is more than proven. So if, while it's predictive, it's almost by chance that it's predictive, because it isn't really the risk behavior. It's a substitute for it that happens to be highly biased. As an underwriter, I would hate to have something highly biased as the basis for my assessment of a risk if I could have something that is more directly tied to the actual exposure. First of all, so I wouldn't be comfortable with credit score, but we are. Second of all, if I knew that something I'm using is biased, I shouldn't feel comfortable with that, and I should seek to replace that. AI has ways to get around that and to offer us kind of off ramps to moments of bias that we would encounter. So an example I shared at the conference was, if you correlate burning candles on a Friday evening with house fires, you'll see a pretty tight pattern versus those who don't burn candles. Mm-hmm. Not out of control, but there is a correlation there. Well, that happens to be tied to religious activities, and you can't discriminate based on religion. So, okay, well, if credit score somehow was predicting whether people were burning those candles, there's nothing you could do about that. You're either using the credit score or you're not. If you're using an AI-based model, you can train it around the different biases that you find. Now, you can't do that with a black box, but I think the black box is almost a red herring. I don't think that's the reality of a lot of these models. Someone built the thing. There is logic behind it. It is learning. And if it's learning off biased data, it will enhance that bias because it's just going to be even better at delivering against it. So if we know there's a bias and we need to seek it out, we can build around that. And that's where I think we need to take a different attitude towards AI is be more curious. And it is still sort of academic phases at the moment, but to just write it off as, well, it's biased, we can't use it. It's like, well, guess what? Everything we do in this industry is already based on bias. So that can't be a good enough reason to just say, no, I can't. I'd be curious to see whether it can unlock some of our opportunities for us and frankly, rate off the actual exposure. And this is where people say, well, but then, what if you live in a high crime area, then it's, you know, it's biased against you. It's like, it is, but it's also higher crime, which means higher losses. So there's a bias, but the bias is also tied to the actual experience.
Right.
So we need to sort out what is it we're doing here, and are we using things that actually recognize the true exposure or not?
Yeah, that is, you know, certainly the conversation in the regulatory world. Of course, it won't be a shock to many people to learn that there's a fair amount of skepticism on the regulatory side, really kind of both ways. One, many of the regulatory policymakers sort of approach this with this is another way for the industry to be opaque and to not, you know, be, you know, so consumers don't really understand how the industry works, and they're just trying to profit off that lack of transparency, that skeptical view. It's not my view. That's the many in the policymaker view and sort of view of the industry, broadly speaking, that certainly influences, you know, their interpretation of this. And then there are those who, you know, obviously have the view, too, that they don't really understand it. Right. They don't really understand the technology of it. And so it must be bad. I remember going back, you know, I've got obviously lots of scars from 2 decades of the credit scoring debate in virtually every place in the country. And I remember, you know, not that long ago, they were these conversations about, you know, well, what if you know, what's next for the industry? Are they going to use, you know, someone's magazine subscriptions to help set their rates? And my reaction has always been, well, maybe there is something you could learn from a risk profile that might be informative to that. But the artificial intelligence kind of brings all of those factors together. And your point's a good one, that you can actually use it done the right way to actually get a better, clearer picture of the risk that maybe can solve for some of these bias questions that we did have before.
That
level of thinking is really going on right now in the regulatory community.
I don't think it's going on in a lot of circles. And I think that's a very normal human reaction to something different and materially different and materially new. And that's okay. The thing that I ended my talk with is something my team's probably sick of hearing, but I've been saying this a lot. We've done some design thinking training, and the phrase that I walked away with is, how might we? And I think that's the message I would leave everyone is, as an industry, we tend to look at new things, problems, opportunities, what have you, with this notion of we can't because, and then we list all the reasons, and there's a gazillion reasons, and they're all valid. Sure. What if we started with, let's park that for a minute. How might we? If this is what we should be doing, could be doing, or might benefit from doing, or benefit others by doing, how might we do that? And we can deal with the complications once we figure it out, you know, what is it we want to do and how will we go about it, rather than just shutting it down from the start or starting with that closed mindset of the impossibility of things. And so I think that's the attitude we all need to take. Now, unfortunately, that doesn't stand well in re-election campaigns and whatnot. It doesn't get people hyped up and angry, which tends to get more votes. But I think we would all do well to just step back and say, well, that's interesting. What if we tried that? How might we do that instead of, well, we can't because.
Right. Well, it's certainly an interesting topic. And you're right about that. The way I characterize that in our industry particularly is, I often say, you know, we're a very heavily regulated industry and we act like it. You know, it's like we have to wait for somebody to tell us it's okay to do something before we try something new in many respects.
Right.
Because we run into all of these barriers in trying to evolve as an industry. But at any rate, it's an interesting conversation. It's going to be with us for a while. I mean, I think the one thing that everybody knows is this is not just a passing fad. Artificial intelligence, machine learning is on our doorsteps. 5 years from now, these conversations will probably look quaint because of the level of engagement that is going on in utilizing these two new tools for the better, hopefully. But there's a lot of work to be done in a lot of places here, both as an industry, with consumers, and with policymakers, and that is, you know, a pretty daunting task, but it's here for us today. So Brian, thanks for joining us today. We've got a lot of work to do as an industry on this, but it's an interesting topic and one that we will talk again about, I'm certain, going forward. So thanks again for joining us today, Brian.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
And that's all for this week's episode of Insurance Uncovered. We'll be back March 20th when we talk with IIHS President David Harkey about decisions to increase the organization's safety ranking standards. Until next time, I'm Justin Hakes. Have a great day.